Bar.
Hi, this is Jeff.
And Gretchen.
And you're listening to This and That Podcast with Jeff and Gretchen, show number 80.
Woo.
That's kind of cool because it's, an even number.
That's right.
So show number 80. What do you think about that?
Yay.
You always have some sort of comment about our show number. I remember you had a comment when we had show number 69. I don't know why you were so excited about that, but...
Oh, thanks for reminding me. Now we're on 80. Gosh, what do we do when we get to 100?
We need to have some sort of podcast party. Maybe we should have a podcast listener appreciation happy hour or something.
There you go.
You know, for our Dallas folks. This is 100 podcasts, and we could invite Pat. And, you know, Pat actually wants to, for those of you who are new listeners, I mean, you've been with the show now for, 3 years? Mm-hmm.
Couple of years, yeah.
A couple of years at least. More than that, I think.
Oh, because I've been in Dallas 4 years now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, the show started with This and That with Jeff and Pat, and Pat was good. But she left the show, and she had a 7-Eleven segment that she did, and so she wants to do that again. Just sort of phone in with a 7-Eleven segment.
Oh,
7-Eleven update, which is always kind of interesting. I actually had a little jingle that went along with that. 7-Eleven update, something like that.
Well, we visited 7-Eleven for the movie.
Yeah, we did. That was kind of
Simpson movie.
That was kind of our 7-Eleven update when they did the whole Simpsonizing.
Yeah, of the 7-Eleven.
Yeah. So, what's been going on in your neck of the world? You've been traveling.
I have been traveling. It's been a long time since we've done this.
Well, it always is, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's always longer than we think
every
it's going to be.
Every month, right?
It's supposed to be a weekly show.
Oh, it's a monthly show. Well, no, it's every
we don't specify
week.
What it is now.
Right. Well, yeah, I've been around. I've been in New Orleans and China and. I'm back, and
you're back.
Have some observations. Yeah,
really.
Yeah,
you have observations.
I had observations.
That's unbelievable
about China, actually. And
by the way, Gretchen got me a beignet mix from New Orleans. I'm so excited about actually making beignets. I'm sugaring it with powdered sugar, and me in the kitchen. This is gonna be just a recipe for disaster. But
do it before the housekeeper comes.
Exactly. That's exactly the logic.
That's right.
Yep.
That's right.
You got it.
So she can pick up all the powdered sugar that's everywhere.
That's in the crevices of everything.
Even eating them. It is just so, actually.
I know.
You know, at the Café du Monde where they're served.
Right.
And they just bring the busloads of tourists and everybody gets off. And
right.
I forgot that it's a lot of Chinese workers there now. And, you know, they bring everything to the table and they take cash on the spot and then you never see them again. Whether you want another cup of coffee or another anything, you'll never see them again.
Yeah,
So, I mean, they've got a system down where it really works for them.
They need the high volume
because
so many
volume.
Tourists come through. Mm-hmm. And I love the beignets there, but it is a little bit
And they were hot and they were just, they get all over everything.
Yeah,
powdered sugar is covering everybody. And you get one napkin and that's all you get.
Most of my Café du Monde beignet remembrances are while hungover.
Yeah. Yes.
I think that's just a standard thing.
It is very standard because they absorb so much alcohol in your system. It's all the grease. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So that was one observation about New Orleans is that I haven't been back since, before Katrina. So,
right.
And they now have a restoration tour. So you can actually go and see what's being restored.
Cool.
Which is kind of interesting. But I think most tourists do what I did, which is, you go to the French Quarter, you stay on Bourbon Street, or you go to your convention, and then you leave.
Right.
And so I'm just not sure how much, I can see why the city isn't bouncing back very quickly, because it's,
It's not bouncing back. I guess the economy doesn't help that either.
No, but even the number of homes have been built, all that money that's poured in, but still very few homes built, a million lawsuits. And I saw something on TV about some barge got loose, actually, and that contributed to one of the problems was a barge got loose. And so if anybody was involved with the barge getting loose, they could join another class action lawsuit. I mean,
it
didn't feel like a really great vibe. Like, things aren't back like they used to be.
Right, right.
So that was my observation about New Orleans. And then China. Well, every day on the news here, you hear about the H1N1 swine flu.
Right.
About when's the vaccine coming, or who's not getting the vaccine, or who's in line, or who's objecting to the vaccine. I mean, it's or is Guantanamo Bay getting the vaccine, and we're not? I mean, hour, it's about the swine flu, right?
Yeah.
Well, in China, I thought this was interesting. They have a different approach to, because there's so many people. people, and because they've gone through the SARS epidemic and they've got epidemics down pretty well,
yeah,
they take your temperature often. If you're in a public place, they're going to take your temperature. And if there's a problem, you're going to be quarantined. And so you really can't go out with a fever. It's quite interesting. But
so it, where do they have checkpoints?
At the train stations.
Is this like anally?
No. It's actually over your head, and you don't even realize you're walking under it.
Seriously?
Yeah.
It can detect temperature? Oh, yeah. My God. Mm-hmm. That's highly efficient. Why don't we do that here?
I know. That's the thing. So you on
would
the,
that be, would,
the train
would
station,
we have people screaming?
Civil rights violations,
yeah,
I'm sure.
Yeah, but, big brothers watching.
Right. But they do it at the airports coming and going.
Wow.
Japan, actually, when I was there in June, Japan, they come on in full regalia, head to toe. They're covered up with, and they actually aim a little gun at your forehead.
Oh, my
they
God.
Do every single individual passenger. So now the fact that they're just doing, you're just walking under this temperature gauge in these other countries, but if I've talked to people who live
wow.
there, and if you have a fever, you'll get stopped and you get thrown into a room and you're quarantined. And
oh
so,
my God, so you could just be going on your
you
business.
You could just be going on your business. So we actually had one guy who works for us who was supposed to meet a couple people for breakfast. He went to the pharmacy to ask about a headache remedy, and they thought that that was his way of saying he had a fever, and they called the quarantine police on him, and they took him away without his cell phone, and he was missing for 5 hours. And they thought he had been kidnapped, so they called the police.
Wow.
I mean, talk about inefficient.
Yeah.
Know, really inefficient. But they do handle it really differently than we do here. And it's just interesting to see the contrast of what other countries do.
So did you, obviously you didn't have a 5-hour quarantine session, but did you go underneath the
yeah,
temperature
yeah.
sensors?
You have to. Yeah. You have to. And you fill out a health form that you have to tell them where you're going to be for the next 7 days with a complete phone number. And you have to tell them where you just were.
Wow.
So they can reach you. I mean, it's just that standard. You do
wow.
it in all countries. So you come and you're going, you're filling out the forms, you're telling them where you are, and they can find you. So it's just very, very different than how we handle it here in the U.S.
You know? Huh, that's interesting. I wonder if other countries do it that way at all.
Or
if it's just China.
I don't know. But and the other thing that was really interesting, while I was watching a gazillion hours of CNN or BBC, which really
yeah.
annoying couple things you can watch.
Right.
There's a huge publicity push for South Korea right now. I think like South Korea is trying to make itself the next big destination, and they are spending a ton of money. So every other hour there was a story on something South Korean, including their fabulous phones, their amazing appliances, their incredible cars.
Travel to South Korea because we have great appliances.
Including their new like sports car. Like they're building like a sports car to compete with a Ferrari.
Wow.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty wild. And they've got like some design sense now, so they're showing you their interiors and their clothing and of course their food, and they're showing exotic things like kimchi donuts. I mean,
oh my gosh.
You just want to
kimchi beignets.
Yeah, there you go. Go bury them outside in some garlic.
It'll be the Korean New Orleans.
Yeah, so I just want to see if it comes here because they were pushing really hard in their region, and I
yeah.
suspect they're going to spend the dollars here and try to make it like the new destination. You know, because they're actually not suffering from the recession like other countries are.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're actually doing surprisingly well in terms of all these hard goods that I mentioned. And they even have they've exported a South Korean soccer star who's playing for Manchester United.
Oh.
And he's like a big deal. And so there's all this buzz about him,
wow.
too.
So, how about
knows?
That?
So we'll just stay tuned to see if South Korea is the next big thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I've been up to.
Interesting.
What have you been doing?
Well, did you see the Windows came out with a new operating system?
I did. I saw some ads. That came out while I was gone.
But, yeah, Windows 7. So
Windows
I'm debating
7.
About getting it. You know, the thing about, I've got Vista, so supposedly you buy it and it's pretty easy to upgrade.
Yeah.
And I've heard nothing but good things about it. I mean, when Vista came out, there's lots of criticisms.
Oh, it was awful, yeah.
7 has gotten some good buzz, and I'm thinking of getting it because I am tired of my Vista machine. All of a sudden, it just kind of slows down, and you can hear the disk whirring away,
mm-hmm.
like it's doing something, but
right.
it doesn't tell you. These things the Mac just never does,
right.
you know? So it's doing something, and it's not telling me, and I can't stop it, and it just slows down the machine. So much so that I can't even click a link on in Firefox.
So I mean, how much
it's absolutely crazy. What was it, like 120 to upgrade from XP to, not XP, Vista to 7.
And why do you need both? Because you're a Mac guy.
Well, I like having a Windows laptop. I've got the iMac here and then a Windows laptop. I just like speak in both languages, I guess.
You too.
And I know I can use Bootcamp or some other technology to load Windows on my Mac, so I can have both.
I have Parallels.
But I don't know. I just sort of like having a Windows machine around, because for business purposes and all that. So, you know, maybe it'll be a dinosaur. But Windows 7 is just supposed to be much smaller almost and just sleeker and not as complex as Vista. And so what I resent is just it makes my computer do things that I don't know what it's doing and slows me down while working. You know, I have a feeling that the Apple does things smart, like it knows when I'm not working on it, and then it probably does its updates and stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Right.
So it's crazy.
Yeah.
So, what else we got? Well, I got a little report on America's safest city. Can you guess what the safest city is?
Oh, I should know this. I know where the ugliest people live.
Oh, where is that?
Philadelphia.
Really?
Because I have a friend in Philly, and I sent her the survey from Travel and Leisure magazine. Philadelphians voted the ugliest people.
How do they vote there?
Travel and Leisure magazine, you know, you figure people have been all over the country and you kind of remember where were the ugliest people.
Philadelphia.
Philadelphia.
I wouldn't have thought that for some reason.
Oh,
I don't
I've
know.
Lived there, I would.
Really?
Oh, yeah. They sell very little makeup in Philadelphia, put it that way. And the prettiest people were in San Diego and Miami. So that makes sense.
Well, southern cities.
That makes sense.
Seems to be that way.
Yeah.
How does Dallas rank in pretty people?
Oh, you know, I didn't see the rankings. I just read like the top hints of it, but
yeah.
So, but anyhow, you're asking about safest cities.
Yeah.
Safest cities. Wow. Would New York be one of them?
No.
Because they cleaned up Times Square, and it's safest big cities or little cities.
I don't know what cutoff they use, but it looks like pretty good sized metropolitan areas.
Hmm. I don't know.
Okay. Well, they rated these things not just on overall crime rate. That was one of the parameters. But also, they looked at workplace fatalities.
Oh, jeez.
I mean, really, how big is that really anyways?
So, how many people go postal in the office?
Yeah, exactly. Traffic-related deaths and natural disaster risk.
I could see natural disaster risk. I mean, come on, people who keep living by the shore and having to rebuild from every hurricane.
Right.
That's pretty damn stupid.
So number one is Minneapolis, the city of lakes. And not only that, but this thing
that's
also...
That's the safest.
Yeah. They also said Minneapolis was one of big metropolitan areas that also didn't cost that much. So they're really high on Minneapolis. But boy, you gotta like cold weather.
You gotta like the snow, boy.
Yeah. Number two is Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Oh my lord.
Yeah, which I lived there for a year and I wouldn't move back.
Yeah.
Third is Portland, Oregon. I liked Portland. I thought that was kind of a cool. You know, I was only there for 3 days, but I liked it.
Uh huh. I've been there.
Number four is Boston, Massachusetts.
Wow.
I know.
That's surprising.
I know.
That's surprising for some reason. I don't know why.
And this is this is what's really surprising to me. From a traffic death standpoint, they ranked number one out of 40. In other words, best.
Oh, best. Okay.
Which is weird because Boston is known
a hard
to have
city to drive in.
Exactly. And then Seattle was number. Was number five after Boston, and they said, and also Seattle did really well on traffic fatalities. So the reason that they cited for both of those cities, because Boston, you think that, you know, it's the craziest
it's
highways,
hard to drive,
right?
Yeah,
but they both have very good mass transit, and that's what they cited.
Oh, okay.
So
yeah.
Huh. Yeah. So
that's interesting. And did Dallas rank anywhere?
Yeah, number 15. Out of 40, I guess it was.
Huh.
Let's see. Yeah, out of 40. And Austin was number 14. Other safe cities were Providence, San Jose, California. New York, I was actually number 8, so it wasn't a bad guess. Cincinnati is number 9. 10 is Cleveland, and tied with Denver, and then Detroit. Detroit's number 12. Detroit's safer than Dallas.
That
oh, that's
is
weird.
Amazing.
What the
that's
heck
amazing.
Is going on with that?
Wow. Maybe there's nobody left there.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Because that's the city where nobody wants to live, so
right.
Maybe everybody's gone.
So number 40, the worst place. Oh, this is right on your list. Miami.
Where the
so
pretty people
they have
are.
Pretty people.
Pretty people, but.
Pretty people with lots
but
of crime.
But they're not safe.
Jacksonville, Florida is second to the last. Houston is number 38 out of 40.
Wow. Houston?
That's interesting.
Maybe it's because they have gangs, right? But where's L.A.? L.A. has to be down there.
L.A. is... LA's 19 out of 40,
wow.
So we're kind of in the middle.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
That is interesting. Hey, so you heard about all the controversy with the 2010 census?
Oh, no, I really haven't been keeping up with that.
It's like, how can this be? It's a census, for God's sake.
Well, these are all very political, right? Because they can redistrict and all that stuff.
Well, but that's not even why this one's... Well, yeah, that's true. This one's political. But, again, there's backlash about the government being too intrusive. So we got a bunch of conservatives out there saying, why are they asking for my phone number? Mm. And I refuse to give them more information than is required by the Constitution, which is really just counting the number of persons in each state.
Because, you know, we all carry our pocket constitutions with us.
That's right. Well, I do.
Yes.
You know, yeah, I know. I do. But that is all the Constitution says, is that it's required by law to count the whole number of persons in each state. Yet the census is asking for things like your phone number, the number of people in households, and who and how many, the race, the sex, the birth dates. And government is saying all that is important because it determines how federal tax dollars are split between communities, and it also determines the number of representatives in House of Representatives in Congress.
Okay.
And so the census is going to spend, this just blows my mind, $300 million in advertising to get Americans to do their civic duty and actually fill out the census form.
Have you gotten one? Because I haven't received anything.
They're coming.
Oh, okay.
And so they'll be doing this by April. So they're starting to mail them out, and 100 million of us will get to file the short form online.
Oh, that would be nice. That would be nice.
So they've done
now,
a test, and they
do we have to? I can't remember what happened. I mean, are we penalized if we don't?
I don't know if we're penalized, but I think they will send a person around then, because there are people who will come around.
Right. So the people, the volunteers, are, I guess they're not volunteers,
they're
make
paid.
A little money. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they're paid. And that's another controversy, is how many people are hired to do the census.
But they only come around if they haven't received anything.
I think so. But I also saw a news report where they are going around. I think they're going to areas where people don't understand the point of the census. And so here's the other controversial part about it. There is an amendment in front of Congress by David Vitter, who is a... House of Representatives member from the state of Louisiana, who stands to lose one of their members depending on the outcome of the census. And he wants to add a question to the census. All right. Now, granted, 425 million copies have been printed and bound and are being distributed right now. Yet he has an amendment in front of Congress that says he wants to ask the question, are you a U.S. citizen? That's the part that just gets me. Like, it's too late. I mean, does he not realize there are printing deadlines and that this is actually a logistics exercise to get all this out there?
Not only that, but isn't the consensus of the census? The idea of the census is to get everybody.
Right.
And that's what always spooks the people who are here illegally to not respond, because they think Big Brother's going to get them. So if you ask that question...
Right.
You know, I don't think that's a good idea.
Right. Minorities mistrust government.
Have a different process for rounding up the illegals and discovering them and so forth, but not the census process.
Because right now we are only estimate, are there 12 million? Are there 20 million? We don't really know because there is no accurate way to count.
Right.
But this certainly isn't going to be the way to count, because it lists your address and then you have to answer, oh, I'm going to check the box. No, I'm not a U.S. citizen.
Right.
Come and get me, INS.
Right.
I mean,
right.
What's he thinking?
Why are there some, I guess he's trying to get reelected, and his dumbass constituents will say, oh, look at him, he's trying to get those immigrants, vote him back.
So the Democrats are saying it's unconstitutional.
You know, we're dumb people in America, you know.
Right. But I mean, I'm really just irritated at the fact that 425 million of these things have been printed. He's wasting everybody's time by making this amendment to go take a vote. What if it would pass? What if by a strange chance it would pass and everybody wants to ask this question? Then do they go back and reprint them again at taxpayer expense? That part just irritates me.
Right.
So,
plus, it almost guarantees the consensus again. I'm saying that the census will be less accurate than it would.
Right. Nobody's going to fill it in. I mean,
they're going to be scared. It's going to spook them.
Won't people even veto it on the basis of why that question's there?
Right.
You know. So anyhow, that's the controversy surrounding the census.
That's a lot of controversy.
You've been missing the controversy, right?
I have been. Well, there's no controversy about this. There's new interesting evidence about the pill.
The birth
control pill, after 40 years, and how it's changing our society. I mean, it's changed our society from a sexual standpoint, but even changing how people select their partners now.
Really?
So scientists have shown, well, first of all, scientists have always known that when a woman is in her ovulation period, when she ovulates, she is attracted to a different kind of guy than when she's not ovulating. She tends to be attracted to the very masculine, rugged, ruggedly handsome type of guy. When she's not ovulating, not only ruggedly handsome, but also kind of opposite.
Huh.
And one of the biological reasons they say that's true is because when you mate with the opposite, you generally have better offspring.
That's okay.
So,
and they're stronger or survival
right,
of the fittest.
Stronger survivals of the fittest, right.
Right.
And then when a woman's not ovulating, she tends to go for the more sensitive, maybe less masculine, that kind of thing. So what happens when the scientists have discovered when you take the pill is that the woman never has, she's not ovulating.
You don't ovulate.
So she never goes for that ruggedly handsome opposite look anymore.
So those poor ruggedly handsome opposite men don't even get a chance with women on the pill?
Right, that's right. I mean, the scientists do say the effect here is subtle. But they said it may be one of the reasons why, you know, there's been a shift from even the movie stars of the 50s. They don't have a list here, but some of the masculine men of the 1950s movies,
like Clark Gable,
like the Clark Gables and so forth, to now you have Will Smith, Johnny Depp, Leonardo DiCaprio, the boyish stars, you know.
Okay,
they say that's one of the reasons. So anyway, I just found that piece.
That's amazing. That
very,
really
very interesting.
Wow.
So, and it also said that men. And this has been known for years, apparently. Now, I didn't know it, but men find women more attractive when they're ovulating. Again, biological reasons, obviously.
Isn't there a difference in pheromones, too? The way we...
Probably.
Probably. How we smell each other?
Right, probably. You can smell us. I mean, hey, it's just like a cat in heat, right?
Right. I mean,
you know,
sort
it's,
of.
That's
yeah.
kind of obvious.
So then what does that mean if women aren't ovulating?
That means that men don't find women quite as attractive.
But if a lot of us are on the pill, then there's your...
You're still relative, right.
...pool to choose from is going to be smaller, right?
Right, right.
Huh.
Right. So let me see what this says.
That's really interesting.
So one of the doctors said the use of the pill could influence a woman's ability to attract a mate by reducing her attractiveness to men.
But there's also the freedom of you don't have to worry about pregnancy, which is kind of a bonus, right?
Right. That's absolutely right. So, okay. Past studies have shown that men find women more attractive around the time of ovulation, possibly because women have evolved in instinctive ways by their natural scent or their behavior. Or alerting men that they are fertile. I know. I've always noticed that behavior when the woman backs into you. Sorry, I was reaching for a bad joke. You know, kind of like cats do. I mean, they're really pretty obvious about.
Oh.
You know, or dogs humping everything.
Oh yes, yeah.
You know, a woman in heat cries out for a male. I've seen that behavior at bars, by the way.
Oh, I bet you have.
Ba-dum-bum. No, I don't really go to bars, so I don't know. Anyway, so there you go. Women out there, if you're listening, if you can't find a mate, maybe the problem is that you're on the pill.
All right, thank you.
There you go.
Thank you, Jeff, for cluing me in on that.
And speaking about pills, and that gets us down to sex, I just found this snippet so funny. I had this from last show, but we never got to it. There was a high-on-drugs Dutch trucker en route to Gothenburg, Sweden, who was masturbating while driving, which is funny enough. But then he lost control, flipping the truck and blocking multiple lanes of traffic. Now get this. While in the wreckage, he kept masturbating. Under police interrogation, he kept masturbating. The man admitted at the scene to have been pleasuring himself while driving, resulting in his loss of control. That accident, which closed down one direction of traffic and shut off a lane traveling the other, didn't deter him from completing the task at hand. So he kept at it while police responded to the scene. When in custody and under interrogation, the man continued his session in the presence of officers. Wow,
ooh.
What's up with that? There's a lot of weird people out there.
Man, I think he's got a bit of a problem, huh?
You think? Well, I kind of found kind of funny when it's like, you know, he's in the middle of the wreckage and they're getting him out and he's like, well, may as well keep going. Nothing else to do. What could be the inspiration at that point?
Oh, my. my gosh. And I heard about a show called Hoarders. Have you heard about that?
No.
Or people with psychiatric problems who hoard things, different kinds of things.
Really?
Yeah, like the woman who would never let go of any old food in her house.
Oh, wow.
So she'd have like a yogurt container that was over a year old.
Mm.
Just like sitting out in an old pumpkin on the floor that had rotted. I mean,
wow.
I mean, it just sounds, it's like a watching a train wreck, I heard. So I might just have to tune in and check that out.
It's actually a show?
Yes, it's called Hoarders.
And they take advantage of these poor, psychologically imbalanced people.
Well, I think they try to get them help.
By laughing at
the help. Clean up the house, you know? And then there's people that hoard animals and then, you know.
Yeah.
And then, or children who have hoarding problems because they're afraid of being separated from their family.
Yeah. And you know, you always hear every now and then the story pops up with the woman being with 75 cats.
Right, all right. And
that's probably a hoarder problem. Yeah, sadly. Yeah.
So he has a masturbation problem.
Yeah.
Can't stop doing it.
Can't stop doing it, even in the most socially
unacceptable places.
Unacceptable places.
I'm surprised that didn't make the news in the U.S. more.
Yeah, like, I don't know where.
Oh, like some studies on how big a problem is that.
Right, right.
You know, we've heard all about texting and how you can't text and drive because that's really dangerous. I wonder if this is a real problem too.
Well, actually, after you have a couple of stories, I have more about doing things while driving. So
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, two really disturbing stories about children, which it's just a shame. But have you heard the latest statistics from the Army that they say 70% of military-aged kids are ineligible to join the military because they are either overweight, unable to pass the entrance exam, dropped out of high school, or had problems with the law?
Really?
Yeah, I just thought that was really pretty
devastating.
Pathetic. 35% of them have medical physical conditions. 18% have had illegal drug use issues. 9% have mental issues. 6% have too many dependents under the age of 18. 5% have criminal records, and these are for kids ages 17 to 24.
I wonder how those percentages compare to like 30 years ago.
Oh, well, they've actually talked about that. That it's now, the Joint Chiefs of Staff are saying it's a matter of national security, and they're actually going to have a news conference saying that we have to pay more attention to the physical and moral fitness of the nation's youths. And they cite that quality early childhood education raises graduation rates by up to 44% and reduces the odds of being arrested for a violent crime by the age of 18. So before they're telling people, you know, if you're overweight, come back when you've lost the weight, or if you can't pass the test, go study a little bit and then come back and take it.
Right.
But now they're saying they have a plethora of people to choose from because the economy is bad and... since we started the all-volunteer force in 1974, they have so many people they can choose from that now they're starting to turn recruits away, and they're finding that this is going to be a really challenge, a real problem, that kids can't do push-ups or pull-ups or even run anymore when we do have to really rely on people.
Right.
You know, when
right.
the economy, when, right. when it starts to get slim pickings again, we're right. really going to have slim pickings. So,
wow.
Yeah, I just thought that was really pretty awful, huh?
Mm.
Yeah, matter of national security. And then the other sad story about kids is that they've been done research for the last 30 years of data, and nearly half of all U.S. children and 90% of black children will be on food stamps at some point during their childhood.
Wow. Oh,
isn't that sad? I just thought that was just awful. The fallout from the current recession could push the numbers even higher. So what it's really saying is that we all know a family who's on food stamps. You just don't know you know them because it's kind of a secret. Nobody talks about it.
In the circles we run, you think that's really...
Well, the criteria for qualifying for food stamps is a family of four has to have take-home pay that doesn't exceed $22,000. So that is poverty.
Yeah.
It's for low-income individuals and families, and it doesn't cover prepared hot foods or alcohol. But children on food stamps are at risk for malnutrition and other illnesses linked to poverty.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So it's just really unbelievable in a country as rich as ours that that's the statistics these days.
I know, but our country's getting less and less rich.
That is very true. That is very true. 40% of U.S. children will live in poverty or near poverty by the age of 17, and half will live at some point with a single-parent family. So... that's a shame.
It doesn't surprise me about
that's
the single.
That's a shame. So I don't know if we actually know anyone. I bet we probably do if you think about like the workers you know, like
right.
that have blue collar jobs or that work multiple jobs.
Right, right.
You know, to support their families. That,
yeah.
That may be true.
Well, I just saw, speaking of, you know, unemployment and the recession, I just saw that today they passed a bill. I can't remember which where they passed it, but to extend the unemployment benefits from 6 months, I think, to a year.
Yeah. But, you know, I've heard the flip side of that is some people don't even want to take a job because the benefits pay more than the jobs. So they won't take the job. They'll keep the benefits.
Well, they need to adjust the benefit then.
That's not productive.
No, that's not productive at all. That's not helping.
Yeah, that was a story in the...
Unemployment is supposed to be a bridge.
Yeah, it's a bridge to help, not a crutch for a full year.
No.
You know, and...
It's not a charity.
No, and we ultimately all pay for it.
Exactly.
So...
Well, so this is what's on Amazon.com. There is this laptop steering wheel and desk. So you affix it to the steering wheel, and it's like a little platform, a little desk. And this is a legitimate product.
You can buy it on Amazon.
Yes, you can. They have a little disclaimer on the product, you know, not safe to use while driving, because this literally attaches to your steering wheel, and it's a desk. So it's for like the traveling guy who's making sales calls, pulls over to the side of the road, gets his laptop out, and has a little mobile desk thing. But somehow it's turned into like a place to make joke comments on the product, you know, joke reviews. And some of these are just very funny, so I thought I'd read a couple of them. This is great for young drivers. My 16-year-old daughter just got her license a few weeks ago. Since then, she's been going out for drives a lot after school. Unfortunately, all the time spent in the car for her has meant less time for homework. Her grades have noticeably slipped. But instead of taking away her car privileges, I bought this steering wheel desk. It's perfect for young drivers with heavy academic loads. Now she can work on her homework and still be out driving, improving her road skills and staying on top of her grades. I couldn't be prouder and would encourage all parents of the new drivers to set their kids up with this super portable workstation. Next one. Amazing. Holds my sheet music perfectly while driving. This has been a total lifesaver. It allows me to prop my sheet music against the wheel, allowing me to play the guitar with both hands while driving.
You could try that, right?
Yeah. Amazing product, but I use this a lot when I'm putting on my makeup. It allows me to keep my makeup, hair scrunchies, separate mirror in front of me, and easily accessible to my T-Mobile to text my gay friend Steve about which club we are going to at night while I'm driving. The only reason I gave it 3 stars is because when I like turn my turning wheel to get on the freeway, everything falls off to the feet and I have to take my finger off the wheel to gather everything up, and people are like honking at me and stuff, and I'm all like, shut up. Can't you see I'm picking this stuff off the floor?
What is that amazing product called? Because I don't know what to get you for Christmas.
It's called a laptop steering wheel desk. and then I can comment. Finally, I can produce my podcast while driving. No more sales. Oh, this is good. Finally, I don't know if anyone else has small children that they drive with, but this has been a lifesaver for me. I get so tired of pulling over when my infant son soils his diapers. Now, whenever I smell that favorite stench, I just turn around and buckle him from his car seat and change him right to the desk. It's a perfect size for a newborn. And believe me, this kid poops a lot. Okay, these work great in the cockpit for our transcontinental flights. My co-pilot and I use these during our daily grind transcontinental flights from San Diego to Minneapolis. We had to modify them a bit to fit snugly against the instrument panels. When we bought them, we didn't realize the plane we fly doesn't have a steering wheel. But in the end, it did its job. With our laptops firmly in place, we were able to focus our attention on what really mattered, participating in raids with our WOW clan. During our last flight, we were so immersed in trying to take down Uranicus that we overshot Minneapolis by a full hour and a half before some annoying flight attendants interrupt us, babbling something about FAA and F-16 fighters. Do you remember that, by the way?
That's good. That's great. Oh, my.
Oh, there was another funny one here. Let me see if I can find it. This is the second awesome item I've bought from this site. I'm even happier with it than my wolf shirt. I'm a bus driver, and this invaluable device helps me get through my tedious 8-hour shift driving kids around. All right, that's kind of the gist of it. So yeah, it's a legitimate product, but there are like people just making these crazy funny comments about it to make a joke out of it, which is really good. creative.
Oh my God, that's bad.
Yeah, I know.
Hey, you drink beer, don't you?
Sure. I'm drinking more wine, a lot more wine lately than beer.
You heard the good news about beer, though?
Tell me.
Well, if you're a beer drinker, that a growing number of states are moving to allow higher alcohol content in beer.
Yay!
Up to 16%.
Oh, my God. That's not
Holy
beer. That's
moly.
Like...
Right now, it's at 4.65, and wine is 11.45.
That's like some serious... That's not going to taste like beer anymore.
Well...
I can't.
Well, 20 states have in place some kind of limit on the amount of alcohol, but there are states now... I mean, leave it to Alabama and West Virginia. Why does that not surprise me, right?
I know.
But some brewers are saying in the National Brewers Association that setting alcohol content limits restricts flavors and styles because you can't put as much malt and other sugars in as you want.
Well,
and
that's fair.
There's actually groups out there called the Iowa Brewers Guild and the Lift the Limit Guild that are trying to work on getting this limits lifted.
You know, now that you mention it, I'm not sure why we have alcohol limits. I mean, seriously, why not make the producers of a beverage make it the way that they think that they want to for the maximum taste, benefit, whatever, and let the consumers decide? That's interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. But since states have laws about it, apparently it affects the common good, since so many states have laws. The president of the National Center on Addiction and Substance Abuse says that with the more alcohol, the faster you'll get drunk and the longer you will stay drunk. There's no evidence that people will drink less or drink fewer beers. And the CEO of Mothers Against Drunk Drivers say our chief concern is that higher alcohol brews be properly labeled so people understand it takes fewer beers to get intoxicated.
And I think that's fair, especially if they first bring it up. I mean, all of a sudden you just introduce this 16%
beer is like,
and
woo!
People just drink it like they normally do.
Right.
That I could see that being a problem, at least in the short term.
Right. And people who drink micro brews or, you know, crafted beers don't drink to get drunk. They drink
right.
to appreciate
right.
the flavors.
Exactly.
So Ohio was one of the first states to raise the limits because they were saying they had a lot of craft beer drinkers. And it does typically cost more.
Sure.
So because it has higher quality ingredients. So
very interesting. So, I'd like to try some 16% beer.
Yeah, I have to see if you can feel a buzz after one, huh?
Probably would.
Probably would if it's stronger than a glass of wine.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, there you go.
How about that?
I have to see what's going to happen with Texas.
Well, this story comes from my mom. Thank you.
Yeah, well,
did you see about the last, the newest American Girl?
Oh,
did you read this?
Yeah, I think I know about her.
See, her name is Gwen Thompson. She wears a simple white eyelet dress with a pink ribbon at the Empire waist. At the Empire waist, I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
She's fresh-faced, sparkly-eyed, and see, this sounds nice, doesn't it?
Uh-huh.
But she's homeless. So American Girl doll, these $95 prima donna dolls that only the rich can afford.
Right.
There's a homeless one. And, you know, as all American girls...
So she doesn't have any gadgets then, all these accessories that come with her? I assume she doesn't have them then.
It doesn't say, but I'm assuming she would not have any accessories.
Maybe a cart.
Maybe a shopping cart.
That was rude.
No, it's not rude. That's funny. I mean, what are these people thinking to put a homeless girl? It seems tacky.
It does seem tacky because typically they're known for their girls of different ethnicities and races.
Right.
Not homeless being a race.
Right.
You know, like the...
Well, and the American girls, the dolls, I'm not an expert. I just read. I don't really know.
I know. I know a bit about them.
Don't tell the listeners about my American Girl collection in the other room, okay?
That is kind of creepy. My guys have doll collections.
Yeah, no kidding.
And they're not blow-up dolls. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. But well, I don't, just to clear the air. There are no dolls here. No, but you know, like all American Girl dolls, apparently they come with a story.
Yes, they have a story. They come with a book.
That's the whole, that's one of the appeals
the
to it.
Mm-hmm,
one of the
you
hooks.
Read the book.
So Gwen has a hook. She's got a story. She was, let's see, tossed out of their home. Gwen's father family begins to unravel faster than the dress on a Dollar Tree Barbie. Her trifling dad abandons Gwen and her mother, Janine, forcing them to sleep in their car. Blah, 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 blah.
So it's a relevant book for today. It's not a girl from history like some of them.
Right.
Yeah. Some of them are historical. So she's a today girl, not from Highland Park, though.
Right.
So speaking of this little story,
that's all I have on that. That's interesting.
I know a little five-year-old who went to a birthday party there. You know, they'll host birthday parties. You bring you and your friends and you go there and have a birthday party at the store.
Yep.
Well, it was.
Do we have one in Dallas, by the way?
Yes, we do, at the Galleria.
Okay.
There's not that many of them. There's New York, there's Chicago, there's Dallas. There's probably a couple more now, but they are a destination for girls usually
at
around
that age, sure.
Yeah, usually around 5 to 10 years old because the dolls are expensive. You take care of them. You order all the accessories. They have tons of clothes, jewelry, all kinds of accessories, from ponies to furniture. I mean, the complete shebang.
So could you buy the homeless American girl and then just accessorize the heck out of her?
You probably could.
Get her a pony.
Get her a pony.
Get her a Jaguar.
Get her an ice cream shop, you know, like that kind of thing.
Yeah, cool.
But my point was that, so I know a girl who went to a party and it was $450 for 14 little girls to go to the party.
Wow.
That's a lot for a five-year-old birthday party.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
they can get away with it, I'm sure.
Oh, they took care of those girls. They
had
activities and yep.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
There you go. So I don't know if they all wanted to buy the homeless doll.
Well, you know,
can't imagine the girls in
my birthday is coming up this month.
Well, I think I'm getting you the lap desk, so don't keep hitting around.
I'm thinking American Girl Party.
You take you and 14 of your girlfriends to the American Girl store. There you go.
That might be fun.
That could be fun. You could be the only adult there.
But actually, you know what? I was at a birthday party for my friend Cindy. Now, I don't know if I've ever mentioned these girls on this podcast, but some of the girls I hang out with are the bitches, and I say bitches because that's what they call themselves, and they've allowed me to be part of the bitches. But so one of the bitches at Cindy's birthday party said, "Jeff, this is something you should talk about on the podcast because people would find it fascinating that I'm the only guy they've ever allowed, and I've taken trips with them, I go to happy hours with them,
right?
And I'm not gay, definitely not gay." But we've been friends for probably 4 years now, and I'm just one of the bitches.
So, giving a shout out to your bitches there, Jeff?
Giving a shout out to the bitches. No, I don't know if that's unique or interesting or what, but I thought I'd mention it since they said...
Well, if any of the listeners are guys out there with a group of girlfriends, why don't you let us know?
But you know, it kind of goes along with what I was saying last podcast, that the single man's dilemma about finding travel partners.
Right.
You got to find women to travel with, and you don't always have romantic partners to go with. So it does help to have some gal pals.
Because single guys don't typically
go with each other.
Go on vacation with each other.
Right. Exactly.
You look really gay.
Look gay, and it's just uncomfortable.
Yeah. You definitely don't share a room.
Right. I think the exception to that is people who have, you know, old college buddies or old high school buddies.
And you have
where they always take a
event.
Fishing trip,
right,
or a
sporting event, right.
Or a golf trip, you know.
I know guys have gone fishing. Or something annual. They do it every year.
Right,
always
exactly.
Do the same place as annual.
Right.
It's a guy's getaway from the wives weekend or whatever.
And but that's a little bit different than what I'm talking about.
Yeah, single guys.
Right.
Trying to go somewhere new and fun. And,
right.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Right.
I get that. Yeah. Well, did you hear the actual good news about the Louisiana justice who resigned?
Well, I heard that he resigned because...
He was the one who refused to do the interracial marriage in Louisiana.
Right.
In 2009, this man refused.
I know.
Oh, I just...
Unbelievable. It's unbelievable that there's still relics of this around, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's unbelievable that he swears he's not a racist. That's the part that just blows my mind. He says, "I do ceremonies for black couples right here in my house. My main concern is for the children." He doesn't believe he's being a racist, but he is a racist. He's refused to marry at least 4 interracial couples in the past 2.5 years. There you have it.
Is there any legal precedence for being able to do that?
No, it's 1967. The ruling that went to the Supreme Court that says that we have the freedom to marry or not marry a person of another race resides with the individual and cannot be infringed on by a state. So he's clearly violating a 1967 law.
Yeah.
The man is a justice of the peace. He knows he's violating the law, and yet he says he's not a racist.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh. It was at least Bobby Jindal did the right thing and said that he should lose his license. And the National Urban League says he's going to be investigated. And the U.S. Civil Rights Department of Justice is looking at him because it's
good.
Just so backwards and social justice. I mean, you and I have certainly dated other races. Can you imagine
right.
if we went down to the courthouse and said we want to marry our Indian friend or our Japanese friend or our black friend, and the justice says no because you're going to have kids who are...
I worry about your children.
I worry about your children based on some weird principle I have in
right.
my mind.
Based on my background and my biases
mm-hmm.
and...
I worry
and I'm
about
gonna
your children.
And I'm going to put this stuff on you because...
Oh, my God. It's just in this day and age, but that's Louisiana.
That's where you were, but they have great beignets.
They do have beignets.
Can't wait to make them. Well, I have a kind of a scary story. Did you read about this Anthony Sowell guy in Cleveland?
Oh, the crazy dude?
Well,
that keeps slaughtering women.
Raped and killed at least 6 people and probably more. Well, here's the interesting thing about it.
I think they found 10 bodies now.
10, is it up to 10?
Mm-hmm.
His house is right next to a sausage shop. And there has been this stench from this house for like 3 or 4 years.
And people thought it was the sausage shop.
People were thinking it was the sausage shop, but the sausage, but the poor sausage.
It was a sausage factory, right?
Yeah.
A sausage factory.
Yeah. Well, I think it was a shop, actually.
Oh.
Well, I don't know.
I think
I'm
they
not
processed
sure.
it. And
maybe
this,
they processed
yeah.
it. But they, you know, they're like, come on, this place, stuff is clean. We've been in business now for 60 years.
Right.
It's not because we're delivering bad food. But what's amazing here, what did they say here? A man familiar with decomposing bodies said it takes someone familiar with rotting bodies to detect the odor. The smell is extremely pungent and hard to describe. He compares the odor to a pile of rotting meat. Sure, that makes sense. Not many people know what a dead body smells like. It's a very, very strong smell that is foul and indistinguishable. It's a mixture of gas, flesh, and blood. It's rotting foul flesh. I hope no one's eating right now.
I'm getting the sense.
It's the reason people are embalmed. The foul odor, this is interesting, the foul odor eventually loses its edge until a body is disturbed. Then it comes back up again. So this is like from a chief investigator for the Wayne County Medical Examiner in Detroit is commenting on it. And he goes, still he is amazed that people lived with this smell for years. And that's what I don't get. It's so distinguishable.
Right. And I thought they had called the cops. And
right.
had the cops come out. How could the cops have missed it?
How could they have missed it? I don't know.
And the sausage place got a whole new sewer line.
They did
a whole bunch of stuff.
Neighbors were convinced that it was sewers. And so, they've done a lot of us. So there you go. Folks, if you smell something that you just never smelled before.
Yeah.
You know, and it's something you maybe like rotten meat or something.
I wonder how you get some action, you know? I don't know. And this guy, it's just insane that he's convicted rapist under, you know, parole supervision, and yet he's got 10 dead bodies in his house.
Right.
How is it the parole officers don't go in? Just like Philip Grado in, you know,
exactly.
Northern California. How
exactly.
is it the parole officers don't go in?
They finally got him because one woman escaped.
Oh, this guy.
Yeah.
This guy, yeah.
That's how they caught him, because one woman escaped and ran for help. And it's like, well, this is what happened. This guy right here. And and then they walked into this house and they smelled the smells. And it's like, oh, I think we got a problem here.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah, I know.
Well, hey, you know what's coming up on Monday?
Don't tell me.
November 9th.
November 9th. I don't know.
It is the 20th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall.
Oh, I knew
Where
that.
Where were you Not. 20 years ago when the Berlin Wall fell? I remember when it came down. It was a huge big deal.
It was a big deal. I don't remember where I was, though. I was working for the airlines then. I was all over the world at that point.
Seriously. You could have been there.
I could have, but I wasn't.
I know somebody who
yeah.
was there,
yeah.
and they said it was amazing. But this is the part that I found interesting. The wall is found across the United States in 26 states. There's scores of fragments and sections on display in 26 states. Pieces of the wall are in 7 presidential libraries, a Chicago elevated train station, and the men's room of a Las Vegas casino.
Really?
There's part of the wall is in Microsoft cafeteria in Washington. Another is in Fort Knox, and parts of it are at the CIA headquarters.
So I wonder how, like, does it look like a wall, or is it just a piece of rubble?
It's just pieces of it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just kind of interesting because it was erected in 1961. And in 1981, the living standards on the West had so far surpassed those on the Iron Curtain East that it was emptying out. So the communist regime closed the border. That was in 61. And then President Kennedy said when he visited Berlin that democracy may not be perfect, but we have never had to put up a wall to keep our people in. And then in 1987, when President Reagan visited, he called on Gorbachev, you know, tear down this wall.
Right.
And on November
that.
9th, 1989, it happened. After years of unrest and economic stagnation, East German government said the citizens could visit it. And crowds of East Berliners climbed on it, and then they started picking away at it. And that's when the news organizations took over, and it was over. So pieces have now been made into earrings and bracelets.
They're on desktops.
They're on knickknack shelves. They're on eBay, where you can buy one the size of a baseball for $20. Larger pieces are more expensive. Like an 11x4 panel could cost $10,000 to $30,000, depending on the presence of original graffiti.
Ah,
isn't that cool that the graffiti adds to it? So I looked up the interactive map on where you can find it in Dallas, and there is some on display at the Hilton Anatole.
Really?
Yeah, isn't that cool? And in Austin at the George H. Walker Bush Presidential Library, and in Houston at Rice University at the James Baker Center for International Studies. Yeah, so isn't that cool? So have to think about on Monday.
I'll have to go visit it at the Anatole. Where in the Anatole is it? Does it say?
It didn't say.
I guess you just go to the concierge and ask them.
Yeah, it's probably in, you know, display somewhere.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, that's very interesting.
Yeah. So there you have it. Hey, you're liking your iPhone still?
Of course. Absolutely.
So
why shouldn't I be?
This past week, they went on sale in China.
Yeah.
And I happened to be there when they were starting to run the ads, and they only sold 5,000 on their opening weekend.
Wow.
Which is a giant disaster.
Really?
Well, they have 710 million cell phone users in China.
Yeah.
And it's so expensive. I know people who said on the black market it's $1,200. Mm. And to do the contract, the full contract, it's like $3,000. And the average Chinese makes at the most $5,000 a year.
So it's a failure, but it doesn't sound like an unexpected failure.
It would be really
hard to get market share when you're
just so much more expensive
than the competition.
It's considered such a high-end consumer, you know, and maybe it's not quite the status symbol there than it is here.
Right, right.
So,
well, is the iPhone a status symbol? I mean, I see it all over the place now. I don't see it as a status symbol because everyone seems to have one.
I don't.
Maybe it is. Well, you're just not statusy.
I know, I'm not statusy.
Like the rest of us. You're just not highfalutin like the rest of us.
I'm not. But they do expect it to be a hit eventually in China. But right now, it's just off to a really slow start.
Huh.
To think that it only sold 5,000 and the lines weren't even long. So,
wow.
Yeah. What a shame. Remember, didn't you wait in line? You did. You waited in line.
Not very long. Yeah, I did. My very first iPhone. The line wasn't too long. I didn't go the first day. I think I waited like...
You put it on hold or something, right?
4 or 5. No, I didn't put it on hold, but I waited like 4 or 5 days. And I think the line I waited was less than a half an hour. But yeah, I was so excited once I watched those videos of the iPhone.
You were.
I know.
A heavy iPhone user.
Yeah, I love it.
Well, that's it then.
That is all we have in this show.
Yeah.
So kids, be careful out there. You know, if you're changing babies while driving, just, you know, watch the road.
Don't text.
All right.
That's it.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.